And you heard it here at Jazz 91 KCSM. But as I was telling you, we were expecting a visit from Grupo Falso Baiano, and they have not disappointed us. They are here. So we are right now going to get started with them, and we're going to kick off with something from their very beautiful album, Viajando, Choro y Jazz. And those are the sounds of Grupo Falso Baiano right here at Jazz 91 KCSM, the Bay Area's jazz station. And it's a great pleasure to welcome this very talented quartet here this afternoon. And man, I didn't think they were all going to come, but they all arrived. And they arrived on Brazilian time, so I'll tell you, it is blessed. It is blessed. But we've got Brian Moran here with us. And Brian, introduce the rest of the folks here, man.
All right. Well, Jesse Appleman is here. He's our mandolin player. Amy Molinelli playing percussion. We got Zach Pittsmith on reeds.
And this is a very fine album that you guys have put out. But, you know, just to begin with, Brian, how did all of you guys come together? And how did the whole choro thing happen for you guys, man?
That's a good question. I guess I was here in the studio with Chris Cortez like 5 years ago for a project called Blowout, which was a jazz sextet, and Zach and I were in that together. So that's kind of how we got to know each other. And I think he was also playing, is this right, with
Phil Thompson and Mike Golds were doing a lot of Brazilian jazz, and Amy and I were in that together. So through different parts, we kind of started piecing things together.
Yeah, so the three of us started with like a trio, Falso Baiano.
Ah.
And then we did that for what, like 2 years? Yeah, and then we met Jesse at the California Brazil camp, which is up north in Cazadero, and that was about a year and a half ago.
2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Wow.
Oh, right, 2 years ago. And yeah, so we've been a quartet since.
And that's great, man. But I know that I've been hearing a lot of you guys from you guys, particularly because of performing at Anna's Jazz Island, where you're mm-hmm. going to be at, you know, this coming Friday, October 3rd, doing your CD release party. And has it been important, let's say, to be able to find a spot where you can be able to perform, you know, to be able to kind of iron out the kinks and work through it?
I think so, absolutely. I mean, having a place that we have, you know, like a regular following, you know, a lot of people keep coming back. You know, it's really a positive experience for us to have, you know, quote, fans, you know, so
yeah.
People are getting into it, you know, we're getting the word out.
Wow. Well, you know, for you, Zach, you know, as a woodwind player and particularly playing the tenor, that's not really something that you normally hear in choro. At least I haven't heard it. Usually it's the clarinet.
Sure.
Is this kind of a new thing?
Not at all, actually, Chewy. The tenor started in choro with pixinguinha, and pixinguinha is a big part of the story of choro, you know, mostly composing his music around the 20s and 30s and then thereafter. But he was along with the flautist Benedito Lacerda, they really created this or really codified the melody and counter melody thing that you really hear a lot in choro.
But I love that, man. You know, people have described it as Brazilian Dixieland.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, just because of all the lines that move across. Would you, is there a comparison?
Absolutely. I think, well, the choro and Dixieland really started, they were kind of a simultaneous growth, but separate from each other. So the accent, the sotaque, is different, but it's the same concept of arpeggiations. And I mean, the nice thing, the wonderful thing that we are, one of the things that we like about choro is the, you know, the classical tradition in there too, and following sonata form, and so a lot of the European traditions in there too.
But Amy, you know, you play the percussion and you get down there with the pandero mm-hmm. and all those wonderful instruments. But one of the things that I dig about choro is the swing. And as my friend David Heyman would say, the swingue, mm-hmm. you know, which is something that I think is very important to choro, that I think it brings it into relation with American jazz. Talk about that swing.
Well, I think the thing about the pandero that it brings, it also brings the other half of choro, which is its African roots. And so, you know, the pandero wasn't initially in choro. It was salon music from Europe, and it started in the mid to late 1800s. And the pandero really didn't come into it until about the 1920s. I think that's when the first pandero was really seen in choro.
But it seems that, like, the pandero also has a tunability, so you actually can get
a little bit of some melodic ideas happening with it.
Absolutely. It's, you know, the pandero comes from the Moors and the Africans taking it through Europe and then arriving in Brazil, where they kind of made it its own thing. It's the national instrument of Brazil, and it has a skinhead on it, different than the samba panderos that have the plastic. So you can actually squeeze the head of it and get different tones.
And you guys do it well, I'll tell you, because it all blends really nice in this recording. And then, of course, the lead instrument, one of the, you can't, I tell you, avoid it in shoto. When you get down to the mandolin, man, it's almost like you're the lead guitarist in the band, Jesse. So how is it, man? Do you just start wailing away? But obviously, there's got to be, you know, a whole form, melodic form, because a lot of the melodies are heard through the mandolin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mandolin came into Brazilian music for the first time around the 40s, I think, with the great composer and virtuoso Jacob do Bandolim. We recorded one of his tunes on our record, and he, show had already existed for 60, 70 years at that point, but he brought in the mandolin, and, you know, it was never the same, and now pretty much any traditional shoto group you go to see in Rio or wherever, the mandolin and the flute are really the lead instruments, so it's a great tradition there.
No, but it's a beautiful instrument, but it's also a very difficult instrument, because some of it is, to a certain degree, you got to play fast, man.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, the challenge is one of the things that drew me to this music, yeah. So.
Well, Jesse, I'll tell you, you do it well. And with that, folks, let's listen to some more of the wonderful music of Grupo Falso Baiano. We're going to give away some tickets to their show this coming Friday, October the 3rd, over at Anna's Jazz Island at 2120 Alston Way in Berkeley. And if you want to read more about them, you can go to annasjazzisland.com to get more information. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Grupo Falso Baiano. If you are not dancing, check your pulse. That is some beautiful stuff there. And Zach, tell us the name of that one.
What just played was Arrastapé.
Arrastapé. Yeah, that one by Valdemir Azevedo.
It's a Baião Galopado. You can kind of picture the, we play it also as marcha, right? It's got a kind of a similar vibe to a marcha or a frevo. Uh-huh. These are northeastern rhythms, and I like to think of it as a Baião Galopado. If it makes you think of a galloping horse.
Wow, so a lot of this has rural roots.
Well, yeah, as Amy said earlier, the shoru has history in the urban salons of Rio, you know, in the mid to late 19th century. But this is northeastern hick music, yeah.
Oh, man, dig that, man.
And that one had Jovino Santos Neto on accordion.
Ah.
Great pianist.
No, we know Jovino, man, I'll tell you, because he also, you know, moonlights as a jazz pianist, you know, so.
and we owe a lot of credit to him, and there are a lot of other teachers around who we've really, you know, gotten a lot from and a lot of support from, and Jovino in particular really added so much to this album. Our producer, of course, Michael Spiro.
Michael!
Oh, yeah.
Wow, man, Michael's an old friend, and I'll tell you, if anybody got me into Brazilian music, it was Spiro back in the day. No, you know, these are the guys that, when I was coming up, that were out there doing it. And did you ever study with Michael, Amy?
Yeah, he's a mentor, friend, all of the above.
Really?
Uh-huh.
For you, getting started playing Brazilian music, because you're from Berkeley, aren't you?
I'm actually from San Mateo.
From San Mateo? Homegirl, man, homegirl. Was Brazilian music something that you heard at all, or did it come later in your life?
No, it came later. I did live in Berkeley, and the first time I went to Brazil was in 98, 99, and I spent about 8 months there. So kind of came back, and I was never the same.
Wow. But then, you know, pursuing the percussion, I mean, were you already a percussionist when you went to Brazil?
I was. I hadn't made a decision to become a percussionist as a profession, but I was really getting into a lot of the African and Afro-Cuban and stuff that's, you know, the Bay Area has a lot of gems, so I was blessed for that.
No, I dig that. I don't know, for a long time I worked over at KPFA in Berkeley, and I would go, you know, to have lunch over there on Addison Street, right? And there was this great place called the Capoeira Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really amazed how that kind of began to bring all this great Brazilian culture, you know, to Berkeley, because there was even a guy that was up the street, I think on Bancroft or further up, where who had a little stand.
Pedro's still there.
Pedro's still there.
The Brazil Cafe.
Yeah. In fact, he's coming out on Friday.
Try the tri-tip sandwich. Which one is it, man? The tri-tip is great there.
Oh, right on, man. I would just usually go and have the juices. You know what I mean? It was very, very cool. But it was great because he would play these cassettes from Brazil, you know, that were like these great mixes of all. But, you know, Brian, you know, as far as like for you, man, getting into the Brazilian sounds and as a guitarist, a lot of times in this music, are you kind of relegated more to just kind of being more the rhythm instrument, or do you get your own parts too, you know?
I would say I get my own parts. I mean, one of the cool things about the seven-string guitar is you have this extra, you got some added bass range. So, I mean, when I came to this music, I had been really checking out a lot of Joe Pass and
Charlie Hunter.
And Charlie Hunter, exactly. Van Epps, all these guys who were basically using the bass strings like a bass player, you know, kind of walking bass and then putting some chords in. So Shoro is kind of similar, except for the bass lines are a lot more active, they're a lot more complicated, and the chord thing is a sort of own language. But yeah, it's really engaging, you know. It's not easy to just... I mean, frankly, I feel like when I was playing jazz, you have a rhythm section and you're the chord instrument, like, you're on easy street, you know, you just comp, you know, accordingly. But when you play seven string and it's just me and Amy as the rhythm section, you know, I'm the bass player and the piano player. She's like the whole drum set with sometimes what is just one hand drum, a pandeiro or something like that. So it's kind of like a lot of rhythmic responsibility to carry. Mm.
So when you solo, you really got to take all that into account.
Absolutely.
Wow, so you really do the Joe Pass thing, huh? All of a sudden keeping everything going.
Well, you try.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it's a challenge. But there's something very comfortable, though, about the way you guys play together that, you know, it sounds like it just flows naturally. Like, you know, there's an organic feeling to it. And is that something that's important to you guys? Jesse, you know, the acousticity of the music, the air, you know, that exists, or... do you plug in every now and then, man?
I mean, I plug in when I have to for gigs, but I think, you know, to hear the soul of Shoro, it has to be acoustic. There's something about the, you know, the acoustic strings and the winds and the percussion and that air moving together. There's something you lose when it goes through a pickup or an amp.
But, you know, as far as the repertoire, I mean, we're talking about that some of this material, you know, dates back decades, you know. But yeah. Is there a more contemporary sound, you know, that you guys are trying to work on?
Yeah, we're definitely, you know, we're incredibly respectful of the tradition. We play a lot of material that's 100 plus years old. But also, you know, we grew up listening to jazz, listening to you know, everything you would expect. So we definitely don't try to exclude our own influences. We're not trying to do something pure and completely traditional. And we're also greatly influenced by a lot of what's going on in Shoro today in Brazil. There's a lot of really hip stuff, you know, a lot of young players taking the music to new places, you know, people who have really learned the tradition but are doing their own thing. So that's, right. We try to incorporate that into our sound.
That's where we come in with some of our jazz influences and things from America, because, you know, we're not Brazilian. We don't try to be. We don't profess to be. But I think it's really, you know, our acknowledgement of those traditions that, man, we're just in love with Brazilian music. There's so much to learn as Americans from the blending of cultures there, and we're pretty excited about it.
Well, I tell you, I think that a lot of people that are out there listening right now are probably getting excited about seeing you guys over at Anna's Jazz Island this coming Friday, October 3rd. Two shows, 8 and 10 p.m. over there at 2120 Alston Way in Berkeley. And we will be giving away some tickets to the 10 p.m. show, folks. So hang with us. And with that, here's more of Grupo Falso Baiano. Isn't that beautiful? Grupo Falso Baiano. But Zach, I'm about to show my age. Tell me about this song, man.
What was that, you want to ask?
Yeah,
right?
I want to ask you, what was that?
Well, as Jesse said, while the music was playing, anyone under 30 probably recognized that from the great tradition of Nintonian, the Nintendonian. I can't even say it.
Nintendo.
That's Super Mario Brothers, man. You know, complete with the star-infused, you know, hyper-speed samba.
What do you call it, though? Irmãos Super Mario.
Well, yeah, of course.
That's cool, know. Man.
It's that the Koji Kondo special. That's the guy who wrote it for Nintendo. And, you know, the whole idea is like, let's just try to do some different things as Shoto and the samba in there. And
have fun with it.
And have
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah, that's great, though. I think that's part of the importance of this music is that, you know, it is a communal music.
Yeah.
So it is about people all grooving together. But tell me about the name. How Grupo Falso Baiano?
Well,
translate it for us.
Sure, Grupo Falso Baiano. I'll tell you first that it's a reference to Geraldo Pereira samba classic from the 1920s, who talks about the falsa baiana.
Oh.
Who is not from Bahia, but you know, she's trying to get in there. She's trying to shake her hips and she's trying to get in and play it. And I think that that's a bit of a reference to us as an other and as foreigners to this music, but we come to it with a love, and we're also from the other bay. That's the other play on words. Falso Bahia, a Bahia falsa. So this is the Bay Area. It's not really Bahia de Todos Santos with Salvador, but, you know, we like to hopefully...
Yeah. It's our joke with the name, you know?
Oh, that's cool. But, you know, the thing is that the Shoto music has really kind of caught on here in the Bay Area. And, you know, there's several people that have, you know, really been very instrumental in kind of hipping us to it all. Mike Marshall is one of them, you know, Mike with Hamilton de Holanda.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've done some very wonderful things. Harvey Wineapple.
Yeah, you played him earlier in the set.
I was thinking about him on the way over.
What a great tutor he's been for us.
He really has. I mean, you know, and the thing is, and Amy, what would you credit to the fact of that all of a sudden, you know, Shoto is kind of emerging, you know, flowering here in the Bay Area? What is it?
Well, I think there's a love of Brazilian music in the Bay Area, and one real good attribute to that is something that Dennis Broughton and Rich Rice do, which is every year they have this Brazil camp up in Casadero, and they've been bringing so many people from Brazil and from all around the country here to teach all kinds, from samba to choro to fajó to everything. And it's this year, I believe, was the 10th anniversary.
That's right.
So it grew from 1 week. Now it's 2 weeks. There's two different sessions. And I think it's kind of created a route for this music here.
And that's important, you know, because, you know, getting it from the source is something that's very important. But also, have you been to Brazil, Brian?
I have.
Yeah?
I've been three times.
Wow. Where'd you go?
Yeah. Spent a lot of time in Sao Paulo. But I've been to Rio, been to Salvador. Yeah, everyone here has been or lived or... I guess actually, everyone here has technically lived there, has had an opportunity and a time and place in their life to actually really, you know, put a root down there. Jesse, you know, most recently came back. He's been living in Rio for 6 months. I don't know, maybe he's got a word to say about that.
And I'd highly recommend it.
Pretty happening.
But what is it about the Brazilians have undergone such a tremendous, you know, political shift, you know, in the last, you know, 8 years, if you will. Mm-hmm. Gilberto Gil was the Minister of Culture up to a few months ago, right. You know, and there's been all these ideas of creating these points of culture, you know, around the country to kind of bring folks out with their ideas. Are you seeing that perhaps some renaissance happening in Brazil today?
I think there's definitely a renaissance as far as, you know, truly Brazilian music there. Because for a long time, you know, you go to Brazil and the music you hear, unless you're in a tourist spot, is American-sounding rock. But I think there's really a resurgence of the traditionally rooted music coming up with the younger generation there. And the government and even the corporate structure of the country, interestingly, does a great job of supporting the arts and culture. I studied for the 6 months I was there at a school that just teaches choro.
Wow.
It's all the masters, you know, the best players in the country teach there every week. And it's totally funded by Petrobras, which is the big oil company.
Dang, man.
So, you know, Chevron's got to get their act together.
Take note, Chevron.
Drill, baby, drill.
Let's not go there, man. Let's not go there. No, but the truth of the matter is that you guys also have drawn from just wonderful folks to join you on this album. And you've got Mike Marshall, Michael Spiro, Ava Sko, as well as Jorge Alabé. And, I mean, these are masters. These are people that really, you know, have done a tremendous job. But, Brian, you were telling me, too, about, because one of the things that really impresses me about this recording is really the recording itself, the clarity, you know, how you hear the separation, how you hear this beautiful balance, you hear the air. And tell us about where you recorded it and the process.
Well, that's, we recorded over with John Evans at San Pablo Recorders. And going into the process, that was a big question, whether or not to sort of reference the classic sound and almost maybe not antique the record, but, you know, give it a sort of old school sound versus doing something that's really contemporary in terms of taking advantage of the technology to make the sounds, as you said, like clear and really get good separation. And we went with that latter approach, and I think it worked out. You know, I think we're all really happy with the way the record sounds.
Wow. And I know you guys have been on a tour, man, doing all kinds of interviews and getting the word out. At this point, what are the hopes for the future, you know, for the group?
Well, I mean, that's, I think we've seen, maybe we've all sort of been surprised by, like, you know, it playing Shoro is, it's working out. You know, people are coming out to the shows. People are getting into the music. We're having a jam session. Musicians are coming out. And like you said, you know, there's a, it's kind of a fertile area here in the Bay Area. And I don't know if I always know the answer why. Sometimes better not to ask. But, you know, as far as what we're going to keep doing is, you know, more shows, you know, look for shows. We actually have a sort of side project that we're developing, a sort of tribute to Root Samba. And we're going to work with a vocalist, Ana Carbacci, who works actually with Sambaceros, which is a bossa nova and Brazilian music group out of the South Bay. So we actually have a show in November at El Rio and another one at Senzala in Sunnyvale. That's November 20th, 22nd. So those are going to be sort of our core group. We're going to play some choros. We'll do some stuff off the record. And then we're going to have her play. And Jorge Alabé is actually going to participate in that project.
Is Jorge Alabé living here now?
He is.
Oh, right on.
You know, so, I mean, he appears on the record as well. We did a cut with him. You know, it was amazing having him in studio. So, you know, I think a combination of higher profile gigs for the core group and then sort of the side project where we're going to, you know, involve some other musicians as well.
Right on, man. And Zach, you guys got any other gigs other than Anna's, man?
What are we doing? On Thursday, we're actually playing with Harvey Wineapple up at Healdsburg at Palette. And what time is that at?
That will be 7 to 10, and the Palette's right off the plaza in Healdsburg.
Yeah. Right on,
and then
man.
Friday,
that's a beautiful area.
Friday, October 3rd, is our CD release at Anna's.
And then after that?
Then I think we have the two shows in November that I just mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it might be dangerous to mention anything into 2009. It's too far away. I don't know if anyone will remember.
Well, I hope that you guys get, you know, the great gigs and great venues and continue, you know, to make some beautiful music. Is there a website, Jesse, where people can get hold of you guys, man?
Yeah, it's falsobaiano.com. That's FALSOBAIANO.
You know, I have to mention somebody else who also was very important in getting this music out. And that is the great Dave Grisman. You know, Dave is someone who has always been, you know, kind of a folklorist of the mandolin. But I remember years ago getting a recording that he put out on his label of this wonderful Jacob de Mandolin. Mm-hmm. And, man, and just being blown away by some of that stuff, you know. And actually, right now, I chose a track, you guys. I chose a track here.
Good.
De Coração a Coração. And this is, and so tell us about Jacob de Mandolin and perhaps what you have learned about him and what he represents for shorter music.
Sure. Well, I think I already mentioned that he was really the first one to bring the mandolin into the music. But other than as an instrumentalist, he also really modernized the music. He made the harmonies more contemporary, the melodies. He brought more of a samba groove into it. And he just had this incredible heart and creativity and musicality to everything he played that sort of became a reference, you know, from the fastest, most virtuosic tunes to the most beautiful waltzes like this one you're about to play.
Wow, so he was like the Django of Shoro.
That's definitely a fair comparison.
Right on. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming through. Anything you want to say in closing, Zach?
No, mostly just thank you for having us here, and it's exciting to be sharing.
And congratulations for winning the tickets
for
Marcella.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, funny how that worked out.
Had the number in my phone already.
No. I have to. Truthfully, he was the seventh caller.
I was the seventh.
Yeah,
Hey, fair and square, there, folks.
Brother, today you should go buy some lottery tickets.
I will. And what number do we want those lucky callers to?
No. We'll get to that one because you know what? We're going to give Amy that distinction right now.
Excellent.
So, how many tickets are we going to give away?
A pair?
We're going to give away two pairs of tickets. So, Amy, pick two numbers.
Oh. My favorite number, 1 and 5.
Okay, folks, you heard it. Callers number 1 and number 5 at 650-574-9136 will get a pair of tickets to go and see Grupo Falso Baiano this Friday, October 3rd for the 10 p.m. show over at Anna's Jazz Island, 2120 Alston Way in Berkeley. And anything you want to say in closing, Amy?
Thanks for having us. We will also be having a few special guests on Friday, so we'll leave that for a mystery.
Right on. And Brian, thank you, man, for setting all this up, man.
Well, no, thank you for having us in. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the support. You know, what KCSN does in the Bay Area is incredible. You know, I mean, we sent our record here. You're playing it. We owe you much, much thanks for that. And if the people out there listening are enjoying what they're hearing, you can actually pick up a copy right off our website. That's the best way right now if you want to get a copy of the record. And again, that's falsobiano.com.
But you're going to have plenty at the...
And we're going to have plenty on Friday. That's right. We're going to have a cart and a mule. We're going to just bring them all in and fling them right off.
Right on. Jesse, anything you want to say, man?
No, just thanks so much for having us on. Hope we see a lot of your listeners out there on Friday.
Very cool. Well, with that, de corazón a corazón, from heart to heart.